This is Tech Talk with Mark Saltzman. Over the next hour, Mark will break down geek speak into street speak so you know what's hot, what's not, and why.
Hey everyone, welcome to Tech Talk. Hope you're all doing great, as we're now into the shortest month of the year. All good, inching closer to the spring. Hey, we have a packed show today with four guests, so no small talk off the top of the show. We're going to kick things off in a moment with LG about its transparent TV. What? You're going to hear in a moment. Also, legendary filmmaker Kevin Smith will join us once again, this time to chat about the 40th anniversary of the Mac and 25th anniversary of the BlackBerry. A free app called Gatsby tells you where you can find free TV shows and movies, and how to block robocallers and scammers with the free Truecaller app. All of this and more on an all-new Tech Talk powered by Chevrolet Canada, which I'll tell you more about shortly, but let's officially kick off the show with our first interview. And now for something completely different. That was the name of an early 1970s Monty Python movie, but it could also serve as a relevant introduction to our next topic. An upcoming TV from LG that's transparent and wireless. To explain, we're joined on the line by Jill Pereira, senior go-to market manager at LG Electronics. Hi, Jill. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me back. It's great to be here, as always.
The listeners and I know that whenever you do stop by, you're going to be chatting with us about something pretty exciting, some new LG innovation. And coming out of the recent Consumer Electronics Show, or CES, in Las Vegas, I did get to see some pretty wild products at the LG booth, including the LG Signature OLED that we're going to learn about with you right now. Let's dive right in. What makes this latest television so special? I think the T doesn't stand for television. I think it stands for something else.
Yeah, and you said it. So obviously, to your point, this is really an exclamation mark on 11 years being the world's number one OLED TV manufacturer. But what a great way to do it with this fantastic new technology, with a transparent TV, something that sounds almost sci-fi, right, when you're talking about it. And we combine that with some great new technology that we launched last year with wireless TV and basically combine those. So it's the world's first wireless 4K OLED transparent TV.
All right, we're going to get more into the wireless part in a moment, but for the real wow factor, I got to say, Jill, in all my years covering tech, I've never seen anything quite like this. And it does feel like I've stepped into the future when looking at this TV at CES in Vegas a few weeks ago. In fact, my video at CES about this TV was viewed more than 1.1 million times on Instagram alone. Thank you. Yeah. With more than 20,000 likes and more than 31,000 shares. So clearly people were just excited to see this virtually as I did in person. So talk to us more about the OLED T, which stands for transparent, about that design and what it looks like in terms of the viewing experience.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this before I came on, and it really, about a year ago, LG globally kind of took a step back and refocused on the customer. Because I think historically, we've always had these fascinating technologies, but with LG putting the customer kind of before the technology and understanding what customers' use cases, regardless of what type of customer we're trying to appeal to, that really sets us up for a product that will actually bring out more value for that customer. And that, I think with the OLED T in particular, you can actually see the combination of beauty and elegance with the function and convenience and how it lends itself to a living space. So as you saw at CES, there isn't one version of this TV. It's actually multifaceted. So you have different orientations or different use cases depending on your living space. So as one example, let's say you're living in a bigger house with a wide open concept living space. We have one version that literally acts almost like a wall separation, where the TV is complemented with this very beautiful, minimalist, almost like brass looking shelving that actually harnesses the TV itself. So when you're actively watching the TV, you can actually, as you would always watch normally, but then at the one click of a button, you have this screen that's behind the screen that literally pulls down, and that's what creates that transparent form factor. And at that point, we have some really cool concept applications within the TV that lend itself to that. So as an example, you can turn on an aquarium. So when you're not actively watching the TV, it's almost like you have an aquarium in your living space at that point.
Yeah, because you can see on the other side of the quote-unquote tank, like as exactly. If it was a real aquarium, but it's a television.
And then in that open form factor, that transparency keeps the spirit of having that beautiful open flow living space, right? So it doesn't block it, doesn't create a wall per se, but it acts like a nice complementary kind of like room division when you're not watching it. But then when you are watching the TV, it's going to turn into a beautiful picture quality OLED TV, as you would imagine from LG OLED TVs in the past.
All right. When it's turned off, you can have it in transparent mode, if you will, where you can see even sort of behind the TV and have it with nothing, or as you said, superimposed with some content like fish swimming around, or there were some other examples that I saw at CES where it's layered on, like almost like augmented reality, where it's layered on top of the real world, but there's something there that is on the television, sort of like a conversation piece when you're sitting with friends. Maybe you can have like a virtual fireplace or something like that, but you could also have it with nothing on at all, and it just kind of blends into your room decor.
Exactly. Yeah, I saw one version in the showroom at CES actually, that the digital image on the screen was captured in such a way that it matched the exact texture and color palette of the wall. So it almost seemed like it was part of the wall when you're not watching it. So that's one way to utilize it. But there, as you saw, there were so many different ways. Like, you could put some nice decor behind the screen and have it play into the theme and the vibe of the room. Yeah. Like maybe some color matching or maybe like some music accessories, like a vinyl record or something like that. But then when you want to watch TV, to your point, press a button and this contrast screen, as we call it, kind of pulls up, and that's what creates that black and that contrast that we expect from picture quality, obviously.
Right. Then it turns into like a regular opaque TV where you can't see behind it. All right. So again, there's three modes. There's transparent, you know, when it's off. There's a semi-transparent, perhaps with digital information on top, kind of like an aquarium, as an example. And then there's like full viewing experience, like an opaque TV. Very versatile, as you can hear. You know, Gilles, whenever there's a new technology, though, some people may be concerned that it hasn't been sort of tested properly or anything like that. Just to be clear, and pun intended, LG had transparent TVs before, so this isn't brand new, but it is for consumers.
Yeah, keeping transparent with your listeners. So I personally have seen and used these on a commercial side at shows in the past. And one of those things that it developed, and it just came to the point where it was time to bring it from the commercial space into the consumer space and into the homes of TV home entertainment enthusiasts.
We are chatting with Gilles Pereira, senior go-to market manager at LG Electronics. We're learning all about the upcoming LG Signature OLED T, which I'll go on the record to say it won CES 2024. Certainly, you know, talking about flexibility, Gilles, and versatility, can we talk for a minute about the fact that this is a wireless TV as well, what that means? And is that similar to last year's M series TVs that we had you on the show to chat about in the fall?
Yeah, you're dead on. So it's a repurposed technology that started with M series from last year, and we've actually combined it with the transparent technology. It removes everything from the physical TV itself with regards to USB ports, HDMI ports, optical ports, anything of that nature, and it separates it and it makes it more versatile. So that especially with the OLED T, where it's not just a TV, it's really a combination of TV and like elegant minimalistic furniture. So you really want it to look as clean and free of cables as possible. So with that wireless box, all you need is essentially line of sight, and it could be pulled like 30 feet away is what we recommend to maintain the 4K resolution, 120 hertz refresh rate. But I've even seen it a little bit beyond that. But we recommend about 30 feet with line of sight, and you're perfectly clean of any wires on the TV itself, obviously outside of the power cable. So as long as you have a power source behind that TV, everything else can be migrated within 30 feet in line of sight. So gaming consoles, Blu-ray players, any of those things that you would in the past physically have to kind of consider the cable management and make it look clean, which is always difficult even with a shelving unit, we now kind of give you the flexibility to put that anywhere in the room.
And also I'll add cable boxes, because I know that some of our listeners, like, you know, the way that the cable comes into their home limits them sometimes on where they can place the TV, but that's not the case anymore. Yeah, you can put that the TV wherever you like. And then as long as you have it at least 10 meters away, or about 30 odd feet, it can wirelessly transmit up to 4K video and audio to the television. And yeah, agreed. Also connect your game console to it. And if you still have a Blu-ray or DVD player or something like that, any of your components. So it's got, again, reinforces that minimalist look. The signature T will be known for because it's transparent, but also because it's wireless. The two seem to go hand in hand. Very cool.
One quick point for the techies that tune in. One thing that came to mind for me is typically there's these like cable purists. Like they feel like if I don't have a cable, the signal won't be as good. That's why a lot of people use HDMI cables as an example. But this has been so rigorously researched and engineered. It's on a different frequency. So there really isn't any other device that's working with that wireless signal. So there won't be any interference from like cell phones or modems or any other Wi-Fi device in your house. But in addition to that, from an audio solution standpoint, our soundbars now have something called Wowcast built in. So you don't need a physical HDMI cable to send through your like Dolby Atmos, for an example, or high resolution audio. That can also be completely wireless to this Zero Connect box. So that's a fantastic audio solution to complement that TV.
Well, that led nicely into my last question. I was going to ask you about the audio because I did mention this is a great TV for social gatherings. So you can have this TV on and enjoy it from, you know, just from a music standpoint.
Exactly. Yeah. And obviously it's versatile. You can pick and choose what solution you want to use. But for the person that wants to use it to its full kind of use case, which is completely wireless, we do have that wireless Wowcast technology built in so that you can kind of continue with that even into the audio solution. Solution part, not just a TV part.
Awesome, Jill. So hey, for the folks at home listening to this or in their cars, where can we learn more about the LG Signature OLED T? And when do you think it will come out? I mean, that's a hard question to answer, but 2024 at least?
So there hasn't been a confirmed launch date, but to stay tuned with updates, I would go to lg.com/CES2024.
All right, lg.com/CES2024 to learn more about the LG Signature OLED T for transparent television and wireless as well. Jill, great to chat with you as always. Thanks so much for carving out some time to talk.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. That was great. Thanks for having me again.
We chat with filmmaker Kevin Smith when we return on Tech Talk. Stay with us.
Breaking down geek speak into street speak. You're listening to Tech Talk with Mark Saltzman, Canada's go-to tech authority for the past 25 years. Here's Tech Talk.
Welcome back to Tech Talk, powered by Chevrolet Canada. The all-new 2023 Chevrolet Colorado has leveled up its tech. Outside, its Multimatic DSSV shocks and available factory lifted suspension make sure you're staying level on and off the road, while available first-in-class Stoflex tailgate storage gives you the flexibility you need. Inside, it's 10 available camera views, 11.3 diagonal infotainment display, and fully digital driver information center make this the truck of the future. The all-new 2023 Chevrolet Colorado was made for more. Start your adventure today at chevrolet.ca. As I mentioned on the show last week, it was a real thrill to be interviewed by Kevin Smith on KFI. That's the number one talk radio station in Southern California and on the iHeartRadio app. Kevin Smith, of course, is a 15-time filmmaker with such hits as Dogma, Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, the Jay and Silent Bob movies, and several others. And I wanted to continue playing a bit more from that chat. In fact, I spoke with him 2 weeks in a row. Being a huge movie fan, that was a real kick, I gotta tell you. But we didn't get to all of it last week, and I thought I'd play a little bit more, especially with the CanCon, the Canadian content. We're going to chat BlackBerry in a minute, but first, celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Mac computer.
It's time to talk tech, Tech Talk.
The machines are getting smarter. This is Tech Talk, brought to you by Skynet.
Tech Talk, kids. We got Mark Saltzman on the line. Mark, you there?
I am indeed. Hey, Kevin. Good to chat with you.
Excellent chatting with you, man. Mm-hmm. You're going to help us understand this crazy new future and present that we live in.
We're going to geek out.
Yeah, I'm ready to geek out, man.
Yeah, so yesterday, 40th anniversary of the Mac. I don't know if you remember the Super Bowl commercial. We were, I guess, 14.
Of course.
Came out. So it was like black and white. It was like this Orwellian kind of vibe where everybody was the same. Yeah, that's what it was called. And then, like, yeah, I think this woman threw like a sledgehammer.
It was
then,
directed by Ridley Scott, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's right.
It was a
massive
expensive ad that honestly, like, promised, something huge is happening. And they weren't wrong.
Yeah. Well, Well, it was the first successful mass marketed computer with a graphical interface. Don't forget, before that, it was like DOS on a Windows where it was all typing. Now it's got you had a mouse, a computer mouse. Look, they each copied off of each other, right? Microsoft and Apple.
They all stole from Xerox,
borrowed,
right?
Yeah, they all borrowed from, yeah, and them too, of course, right? But look, you got to give them props where it's due. I'm still waiting for a touchscreen Mac. It's not going to happen.
I guess that's right? Why will that never happen?
I don't know. They're just, I guess they feel like it's going to cannibalize other parts of their business. I use a Mac for video editing and that's it. I use a Windows PC for everything else. I like the versatility of it. I love touchscreens. I love the two-in-ones where the screen pops off or bends around and becomes a tablet. Like, there's a lot more, I think, innovation when it comes to Windows PCs. That's just me. I'm old school, but right. Macs are, hey, they're rock solid. You don't get a lot of viruses on them. Everything's like, you know, the whole walled garden approach. Everything's been vetted what you download, right?
So I've been a Mac guy forever. I ever flirt with the PC world, unless it has something to do with editing or something like that. But I've watched, you know, I'm a guy who, like you, both of us born 1970. Like, there was a time where these screens were not a part of our world, man. But like, my kid is a kid who grew up on screens. My daughter Harley Quinn is like 24 years old. The other day, I literally handed her a framed photo of my father when he was like 27 years old. I was like, look at grandpa, check him out. And she took the small, it was a handheld frame photo about the size of a cell phone, but she took it from me and then she pinched the picture to try to make it larger.
Oh, come on. She did not.
I was like, are you insane? She's like, I forgot. I'm so sorry.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. That's a good one. That's a total Gen Z thing.
You're not kidding. Well, we live in a world, man, where we are used to pinching. And not just loaves anymore. We're used to pinching the screen, spreading the image out and whatnot. And that's all because of a bunch of people. But Jobs gets the credit for being the visionary who's like, I can pull it all together. Yes, he didn't necessarily invent every technology or necessarily code himself. But he had some vision that we could all be in on this, not just some people.
And he did it with the iPhone, which, to his credit, basically killed the BlackBerry, which is another anniversary we're celebrating. So 40 years for the Mac and then 25 years for the BlackBerry.
25 years since CrackBerry was all the rage? Right.
To the month, to the month. But this was before it was a phone. So this was an email pager. But it was the first time that with a little device that looked like a pager, you can receive email on the go and reply to it. That was like earth shattering and mostly for mobile professionals. Like, it was executives who was using that. And then it wasn't until 2002 when the BlackBerry 5810 came out that it was both a cell phone and this secure email platform with a physical keyboard. I should actually backtrack for a second. I said the iPhone killed BlackBerry.
In this business particularly, literally everybody had a CrackBerry in their
hands. The president. Yeah, the president. But it wasn't until, here's what I wanted to clarify, it wasn't until 2011, so 3 years after the iPhone came out, that BlackBerry was at its peak with 85 million world. Yeah, a lot of people think that iPhone came out in 2008, Android a year later, and it decimated the BlackBerry business. And the film isn't exactly clear about this either, the BlackBerry movie. If you've seen that,
the one directed by Matthew Johnson.
Great flick. Debuted at the TIFF.
Wonderful director.
Yeah, and you've been up here for TIFF, right?
Oh,
you've
many times. Tusk played Midnight. Zach and Mary played Midnight. I met my friend Malcolm Ingram up there, who lives on the corner of Church and Wellesley, at the Toronto Film Festival for Clerks years ago.
Sweet. So it was 3 years later that BlackBerry was still number one, 80 million units sold worldwide in 2011. But then it took a sharp nosedive. Even BBM, if you remember that, BlackBerry Messenger couldn't save BlackBerry. And then, you know, I think Steve Jobs, to your point, was more of a visionary. He saw a smartphone as a more versatile device. It was more versatile. You can do everything. It's like a digital Swiss Army knife. It wasn't just for email. Where BlackBerry, they were just set in the fact, nope, this is a corporate device and nobody wants to play games on it. They were wrong.
I'll be honest with you. I would have been the BlackBerry guy. Like, I would not have had the vision to see everything one could do on a smartphone. Mm-hmm. To me, it's like, oh, it's a phone. And, oh, I get my phone while I'm on the go. Well, that's good enough. And now I could get text. Well, what more do you want? And then somebody was like, oh, so much more. Don't you want to watch pornography on your phone?
Well, it does have a screen protector.
Oh, Mark, that is tech talk if I've ever heard it. That's getting very technical.
Funny, though. that in 2024, the recent Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas, one of the most talked about devices was a keyboard that makes your iPhone feel like a BlackBerry. It was like a physical keyboard that snaps into the bottom of an iPhone.
We all think we want progress until the thing is gone. That's then it. We get nostalgic about it. And we're like, can we have it back the old way? And they're now you can have it both ways. New Coke and Coke. How weird to throw a... I guess you could do that with iPads, right? An overgrown iPhone is an iPad. And they come with those keyboards that you can lean on. So I guess it makes sense that like someone would do something like that for an iPhone. But that was a skill set that most thought was long gone, being able to type fast on a BlackBerry, because that went away. They had the traditional keyboard, right? They did the QWERTY UI open, the same ASDF, JKL, semicolon.
Yep, they did. They pioneered that. Yeah. And then, iPhone, a lot of naysayers said, oh, iPhone's going to bomb because people don't want to type on a touchscreen. Well, people learn pretty quick. And then with AI that helps you type because it's guessing what you want to say, even though we don't have a ducking clue sometimes what our iPhone thinks we want to say.
Oh my Lord, I just put that together. You're right. With all this talk about like AI is the enemy. And meanwhile, it's been in our lives forever, spell, honor with a U.
I talk into my devices because I find it's much faster and more accurate than me typing. I got fat thumbs. I'm just like, I can talk really fast and it gets it like 99%.
The idea of talking into your phone instead of sitting there typing, it's intuitive enough to pick it up and kind of go with it.
Do you ever write screenplays like that, or is it all typing first?
What do you mean, typing like on a typewriter or?
No, on your Mac, you said. Yes. But do you ever speak because you find that it's just faster or
tuned? I've never done that. Okay. Within the last year, started playing around with talk texting while I'm on the phone using Apple CarPlay and realizing, I don't have to, try to type with my two hands and let go of the wheel. I could actually just talk out loud. Mm-hmm. But it never occurred to me to actually try for writing a screenplay.
Again, it was so cool to be interviewed by Kevin Smith. There's even more we talk about Easter eggs, those little secrets on DVDs that Kevin was very much a part of in the early 2000s. I wrote books about them. Don't forget, we're going to chat about how to stop robocallers and scammers calling your smartphone in a moment. But before we continue on with the show, while we often talk about new technology on this program, it's important to properly recycle your old tech, your end-of-life electronics. In fact, it's super easy to recycle your devices. Simply visit recyclemyelectronics.ca, type in your postal code or your address, and you'll find one of the many drop-off locations near you. After all, when it comes to your tech, what's inside counts. The future is literally in your hands. Don't let it go to e-waste. That website again is recyclemyelectronics.ca. When we return on Tech Talk, Truecaller will join us about its free app for iPhone and Android devices to stop spam and robocalls. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tech Talk, where you won't need a Geek to English dictionary to tune in. Welcoming back our host, Mark Saltzman.
Robocalls and spam calls are bad enough. I think we can all agree to that. But the advent of AI, or artificial intelligence, may make it even worse in 2024. To talk to us about the problem and solution, we're joined by Clayton Leah-Broughton. He's Senior Strategic Advisor at Truecaller, one of the more popular apps that attempts to stop unwanted calls. Welcome to the show, Clayton. Good to chat with you.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me. And it is a plague, and love to talk to you about how it's going to get worse before it gets better, but how it's going to get better.
Okay, so there's a silver lining here. And I'm glad that you took my call, because I figure you could have blocked me easily with your software. So
you didn't come through as spam or AI, so that was good.
That's good to know. All right. Now, before we do talk about AI, tell us what robocalls are exactly, just so we're all on the same page here.
Yeah, I think it's important to kind of establish a glossary of this. Robocalls were originally automated calls for telemarketing, right? And so they what was robotic about them was, number one, the mass outdialing of calls, and number two, a mechanical voice or a robotic voice that was pitching one product or another. Maybe it was informative, And so not all robocalls are illegitimate or bad,
right?
But at least in the US and in North America, we began making robocalls synonymous with spam calls. And so we started to think about these are automated, very large scale campaigns that are trying to sell you a car warranty or are trying to do some sort of a notification. Good robocalls might come from a school district. Hey, there's no school, there's too much snow. But there's a lot of them that were categorized as spam.
Or a political party saying, don't forget to vote tomorrow, right?
Could be. But now, to your earlier point, we've got AI-generated synthesized voices, and we have political season. And so that becomes this perfect storm of an increase of spam calling and spam texting. And that's where Truecaller comes in to try to protect citizens and consumers from nefarious activity and separate legitimate commerce from harassment.
Okay, so just to reiterate, spam and scam may sound the same, but they're not. A spam call is a mass send out of a voicemail. It's not a real person, right? It's a recording, whether it's a robotic voice or a human that recorded a greeting. And it could be just for the purposes of marketing or spreading information about something, like, you know, there's a weather warning in our city, that kind of thing. So that's legit. It, even though it's spam, meaning it's a bunch of people are hit at once, whether it's legit or not. A scam is obviously an intention to defraud you.
Yeah, I would even nuance it a little bit further. So you've got, you know, robocalls could be a pharmacy, right? That's good. And so that's fine. A scam, let me put it in this term. Let's talk about hospitality. A scam could be, hey, Mark, I want to sell you an all-inclusive vacation. You're going to get there. You're going to have an oceanfront property. And then you get there and through a tiny window in a restroom, you can see the ocean, right? And you've been scammed. There is value exchange, but it's not the value accepted. Fraud comes when I get you an all expense paid vacation to, say, you know, the Ritz in Naples, Florida, and you get there and there's no reservation because you've been defrauded, right? So there's this kind of full spectrum of how
I hear you. Yeah, I'm just splitting hairs here. I just want to make sure that our listeners know that a robocall isn't necessarily evil.
No.
It's an efficient and inexpensive way for someone or an organization to reach out to a lot of people at once. Still annoying, but it may not be nefarious. So we've identified the problem, a twofold problem, let's say. Now let's talk about your solution. So it's called Truecaller, and this is an app for mobile phones.
That's right. And it works on Android and iOS. We have over 368 million global users in 42 countries.
Wow.
So extremely popular. Robocall spam, not just a U.S. problem, right? This is a global epidemic. And so, you know, we're by far the largest. And so we see a lot of call traffic and have a lot of really good insights on which are the bad calls and which are the good calls, right? And so to your point earlier, if you overachieve with brute force blocking, then really important calls might not get through. So what we say is take the right call, take the calls that matter. And so it's not just about blocking the bad guys, it's making sure that the important ones get through without overfiltering.
First of all, 368 million users. Congratulations. You know how many app developers would die for those kinds of numbers? That's amazing. Can you walk us through how it works? So you download the app from the App Store for iPhone or Google Play Store for an Android device. Then what?
It just starts working. So, you know, first of all, the applications are privacy by design. So we take very little information from the user, just enough to identify them as unique in the system. The profile information is never exposed outside of Truecaller. It's never monetized. Everything is designed by privacy.
And what do you share with Truecaller? Is it your phone number, your name?
Basically a name and an email and the picks and the phone number.
Okay.
So that you've got some sort of an identifier. What's interesting is that as soon as you activate the app, now you're able to access this incredible dynamic database that's derived through machine learning of all of these billions of numbers in the global ecosystem. And that means that we can put identities against the numbers that are not in your phone book or that are unknown callers, or we can identify them as spam or in a certain type of category, could be telemarketing, could be collections. And then you're immediately getting access to that. On top of which, with that many, you know, 368 million users, we've got an incredibly vigilant community who is dispositioning these calls. So people are actually saying, nope, you had that name wrong. It's not Clayton, it's Clay. Or no, this was not a sales call. It was a collections call. It was a support call. So nobody else has this massive community of people who are constantly adjusting those identities. It's very valuable.
And I guess that these callers they're often spoofed numbers, they're not real. So even if you try to block, let's say you don't want to use Truecaller and you just want to block a number that's coming in, it may look like even the same area code that you're living in, which is by design with these spammers or scammers. Even if you block that number, that same call can come in an hour later under another number, right? It's not even a real number.
Yeah, so there's a lot of that. Now, I will say that you know, the regulators in the U.S. and the carriers have made some steps against that, which we call neighbor spoofing, what you just described.
Because you're more likely to pick it up if it's the same area code.
Yeah, it looks like it's from somebody in town. I'll pick it up. But what's really interesting is that there's criminals who are kicking off these scam campaigns, these fraud campaigns. They're not only really good technologists that can figure out how to insert a phone number, they're astute psychologists. So they can social engineer a message that's going to sound relevant to you from what they know about you from social media and other resources.
And I want to ask you more about that AI component in a second. We are chatting with Clayton Leah-Broughton. He is Senior Strategic Advisor at Truecaller. That's the name of the company and the app that you can look for at your favorite app store. Truecaller is one word. And it does, just before we continue, it does work with any kind of phone you've got in any carrier. It doesn't matter who your provider is.
Smartphone with a data connection.
All right. So how has artificial intelligence or AI made things worse for us on the receiving end of these calls?
Yeah, it's a great question. Highly topical. I mean, obviously, last week in New Hampshire, there was somebody who had spoofed and synthesized Biden's voice telling voters not to show up. So
right.
Kind of a voter suppression type thing. But it's more than just voice synthesis. So number one, one of the biggest problems is that using AI and ML.
And ML, of course, is machine learning. It's a form of AI or artificial intelligence.
Yeah, the bad guys can scrape all kinds of information from social media that we share freely, and they can build target groups, right? So they can build target segments to say, oh, you graduated from this college, or you drive this kind of car, or you like this sports team. They can be very, very targeted. Additionally, in bygone days, right, the robocallers, if they weren't really robocallers, they were humans, they would often have an accent, or the script would be broken English, whether it was a voice or text. And you'd see it come through and say, yeah, this looks really squirrely because everything is misspelled. Well, guess what? We're in the age of generative AI. So now you can have legitimate sounding voices with really good scripts that are targeted and contextually relevant to you. That's weaponization.
Yeah. And there's also these scams that we've heard about, Clayton, of employees who are getting voice calls from what sounds like their boss telling them to wire money to this supplier or this, you know, partner here and there. And it's fraudulent. It sounds legit because it's AI. It sounds like their exact boss. They're using like just a couple of seconds of their real voice in order to generate this script. It's pretty scary.
It's really scary. So think about what goes into that. I only now need to sample your voice for about 9 or 10 seconds before I can start synthesizing messages that has Mark Saltzman saying just about anything I want him to. Now, that's part of it. Now, the other piece of it is somebody's probably gone into LinkedIn or a similar platform and saying, what's the hierarchy? Oh, Mark reports to Clayton. So let's go after Mark with Clayton's voice. So there's all this technology that goes into these spear phishing. You know, I think we'll see a lot more spear phishing scams than what we used to see were just these kind of shotgun approaches to just grabbing as much as you could in a numbers game.
And then finally, how much does Truecaller cost?
So Truecaller is free. For the enhanced premium services on iPhone, for example, it could be, you know, $5 to $10 a month. All that information is in the App Store. There's obviously, if you buy a year at a time for the premium services, then you get some discounts. But the apps are free. The Android app is always free. There's a premium option for it.
Truecaller, again, one word. You can find it at the App Store or Google Play. Clayton's been our guest. Thanks so much for your time, Clayton. Great to chat with you. All the best.
Yeah, Mark. Hope to talk to you again in the future. Thank you so much.
Speaking of free apps for your phone, when we return Gatsby, we'll learn about this app that helps you find free TV shows and movies, regardless of the TV service that you have access to, streaming service, and so on. So stick with us. This is going to be great info. When we return on Tech Talk, you can save your money, folks. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Do you ever feel like you want to watch TV but can't find anything to watch? Well, you're not alone. And so a new app called Gatsby TV aims to change all that. Joining us to explain how is Gatsby Frimpong. He's co-founder and CEO of Gatsby TV. Thanks for your time, Gatsby. Great to chat with you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What's that Bruce Springsteen song? 57 channels and nothing to watch. Now it's like 5,700 channels.
That sounds all right.
I guess we can all relate to that these days. There's so much content. So at a high level, what is the Gatsby TV app all about?
Yeah, so the Gatsby TV app allows you to primarily do three things. The first thing allows you to search across all TV and movies across the English-speaking world. And so that's a really good feature there because instead of going in and out of Netflix and out of Hulu and out of Amazon, you can do it all in one place. The second thing it does is that it shows you where you can watch any TV or movie for free via subscription or where you can buy it, which is really awesome also. And then the third thing that it does is it allows you to send recommendations to and from friends and family members. So if you're at the water cooler or if you're at brunch talking to someone about this new show you just watched, maybe it's Bridgerton or something like that, you can simply just pull out your phone and send a recommendation via the Gatsby app to a friend. And the next time they're interested in looking for new shows to watch, they'll see the list of recommendations from all their friends.
So you mentioned Netflix as an example. Does Gatsby TV, this app, only work with streaming services or also cable TV, network TV?
Yeah, so basically anything that's on TV. So it could be on cable networks, it could be something that's streaming. It doesn't really matter, because what we do is, again, tell you where you can watch it for free via subscription or where you can buy it. And within the app, when you click the TV show, it'll actually send you out to the Netflix app, or it'll send you out to the TBS app. Amazingly, they have one. And any other app that any of these stations have.
Okay, so when you say free and subscription, like obviously Netflix is a paid service, but are you referring to services like Tubi and Pluto and all that, where they may have, like if I'm like, hey, I want to watch the movie Total Recall, and the Gatsby app will like, well, hey, Mark, you don't have to pay for that. Did you know that Tubi has it, if you don't mind sitting through a couple of little ads? Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, that's 100% it, because right now people are unaware of how much free TV there is actually out there. And so we like to put it up front and center so that people know that they have other options.
And you have data that shows that people can spend up to 30 minutes just to try and find something to watch. Is that right?
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. It's kind of what brought me to sort of start the Gatsby TV app, was this essential problem, because it was a problem for me. I couldn't find TV shows or movies to watch. And I thought, you know, I have a litany of various streaming video on demand services, from Netflix to Hulu to Amazon Prime to Apple TV Plus, Paramount Plus.
To Disney, to HBO. Yeah, it goes on and on.
And in some ways, it's not a problem of choice. Like, we have a lot of choices. Yeah,
but if not too much.
Exactly. And it's trying to figure out how to sort through the minutia to find the actual good stuff, because honestly, there's more bad stuff out there than good stuff.
Right. When you buy something digitally, you own it, right? Whereas with streaming services, you kind of rent it. Is that fair?
Yeah. So in terms of this, what we do in the app is you don't actually buy a subscription or anything via us. You use your current subscription. So you log into Netflix on your phone, you log into Hulu on your phone, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so what ends up happening is, when you search for a show and it's on one of those networks, we'll actually kick you out of our app into their app. And so if it's something that you've already bought digitally, then yeah, it's totally fine and easy for you to watch with no need to rent or anything like that. But if you haven't already bought it digitally from them, well, you got to pay.
Yeah, understood. Thank you for that. Do you browse by station or service, or do you do a keyword search, or it's a bit of both?
You can do everything. So there's many different permutations of this. So you can go in and you can type in Dark Knight, and it'll show you all the various Dark Knight movies if you want to do a text-based search. But if you say, okay, I don't really have enough time to binge on a TV show, it's just a Friday night and I want to watch a movie, you can actually filter and find a movie. And then if you say, well, I'm looking for a movie, but I want something that's either on Netflix or Hulu or maybe on Paramount Plus, and I want it to be a horror comedy, then you can also actually sort by those various
parameters.
Yeah, so it's a lot of different ways in which you can search. You can choose to search by network, not by network, by network and by genre, stuff, movies, etc. So
cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of horror comedy, I just watched Scream again from 2000, I think it was. Anyways, is there any AI to Gatsby TV? That is, could your platform know that I do like horror movies or sci-fi TV shows and not rom-coms, for example, and then it'll learn that over my preferences, or do you have to type that in?
Yeah. So this is interesting, because we're going very much against the grain and very much against the culture today in terms of AI. For me, I love AI. I think AI is great. I'm currently actually studying AI at Stanford University. And so it's not that I'm against AI at all. My thing really is that we're building an app for people, right? We're not building an app for users, right? And I use that distinction because, to me, users is something you would call like a drug addict or something, right? Like, and so for me, what I say is, if we're building an app for people, then we need to build it in a way in which people are using it the way that they actually do things in real life. And so again, going back to my example before about being at a water cooler or being at brunch or sending a text to a friend, this is how people generally find TV shows and movies. And so within the app, the way that you actually find and you discover new TV shows and movies is via a recommendation from a friend. So you send me a recommendation, you say, hey, I've watched this new TV show, Game of Thrones, is absolutely awesome.
Word of mouth.
I see the recommendation and I start watching on HBO, and the app will actually tell the user who's sent the recommendation initially, oh, wow, your friend started watching Game of Thrones. And so it starts this conversation between the two friends, or it continues the conversation. So next time they meet offline, they can say, oh yeah, you know, what did you think about, you know, The Red Wedding or something like that, right? And so you can very much start watching a show with their friend and see where their progress is, and again, continue to have those in-person conversations.
Awesome. We're chatting with Gatsby Frimpong. He's co-founder and CEO of Gatsby TV. This is an app that helps you find something to watch. And I understand, Gatsby, that you've already had over 100,000 downloads so far. Wow, congrats. And is there a way to find content that's highly rated, like a Rotten Tomatoes kind of system, anything like that?
Yeah, so within the app, you can search by various different parameters, whether you want to watch a movie versus a TV show, something on Amazon versus Netflix, a horror versus a comedy, etc. But one of the other ways in which you can search for TV shows and movies is you can actually filter based on what we have. We have this grading system, so A, B, C. And so generally, the award-winning shows all tend to be A's, to be quite honest. And sure. So if you're looking for something that's probably up for awards, you go ahead and you search for grade A. And the other thing I actually want to mention on that is the reason why we have our own rating system is because what we found when we started building the app is that Rotten Tomatoes, Metacritic, IMDb, all of these ratings agencies have been basically compromised because Rotten Tomatoes is owned by NBC, Universal, and Warner Brothers. IMDb is owned by Amazon. Mm-hmm. And so we thought that for some shows, there might be a little bit of corruption. Those ratings might not exactly be correct. And so we take input from our users to see what they're recommending, what they're watching. And then we also see how shows are rated on rival rating agencies in order to come up with our own grade. And so that's how we figure out grade A versus C.
And confirming that Gatsby TV is available for both iOS, so iPhone and iPad, as well as Android devices, yeah?
Gatsby TV is available on the Google Play Store as well as the Apple App Store. Mm-hmm. And so you can basically find it on any device. And then, yeah, outside of that, you can also find us on the web at www.gatsby.tv. That's another way to use our application.
Yeah, because some people may prefer a bigger screen, like a laptop or a desktop computer. So Gatsby.tv will also work?
Yes, and we are currently working on the Apple TV version of the app too.
So. Oh, cool. Before we wrap up, how much does it cost to use Gatsby TV? And if it's free, how does Gatsby TV make money?
It's a completely free app and we do not make any money whatsoever. This is kind of right now actually out of the goodness of my heart because again, this is a problem that I had myself. And so I decided, you know, why not put something good out there in the world that'll help other people solve the same problem I have.
Okay, so completely free to download from both the App Store and Google Play Store, or you can head over to www.gatsbytv. Great Gatsby indeed. I'm sure you haven't heard that before. Thanks so much for your time, Gatsby, and good luck at Stanford finishing up your degree there. Gatsby, all the best. Thank you so much for carving out some time to chat.
No problem.
Take care. Yeah. Tech Talk is powered by Chevrolet Canada. The all-new 2023 Chevrolet Colorado has leveled up its tech. Outside, its Multimatic DSSV shocks and available factory lifted suspension make sure you're staying level on and off the road. While available first-in-class Stoflex tailgate storage gives you the flexibility you need. Inside, it's 10 available camera views, 11.3 diagonal infotainment display, and fully digital driver information center make this the truck of the future. The all-new 2023 Chevrolet Colorado was made for more. Start your adventure today at Chevrolet.ca. Hey, thank you for tuning into the very first Tech Talk of February 2024. Hope you make the most out of the rest of your weekend. Have a healthy and safe week ahead. And I look forward to catching up with you next weekend for another episode of Tech Talk. Bye-bye for now.
Don't forget to tune in to Tech Talk next weekend for more tech news you can use, interviews, reviews, and how-tos. Tech Talk with Mark Saltzman.